Thank you for giving me a chance to talk here. And so the work is done in part with my graduate student, who has this bosonic name, Li Li. I hope it's and so I will spend a certain amount of time on describing motivation, because it's not a very popular topic, and then show you some encouraging result with models that are not too complicated, and then discuss the case I started working on, which is a four-dimensional gluodynamics, so gauge theory without fermions, and then briefly mention a few projects that I have and that I just started to think about. So the motivation are very simple. So my main goal is to construct perturbative series which are converging, and which are converging toward values that are not too far from what you are trying to get. So if you have a general observable, say in a lambda phi 4 theory, what I'm trying to do is to find a decent approximation at finite order, and the difference with the regular perturbation theory is I'm trying to control the large field fluctuation, and I introduce what I would call the large field cutoff. And so as you will see, there is no unique way to do this, but a very simple way to picture what you can do in a partition function is just to reduce the range of integration of the field variable.
How about derivatives?
On the derivatives? Well, I mean, if you are on a lattice, then there is a natural, there's a cutoff dependent bound on the gradient.
Big fields, and there's rough fields, they seem to be slightly different things. Uh-huh.
So I've not done this, but you can control the gradient with the cutoff and the field cutoff at the same time.
Yeah, but you're mainly interested in sort of how this cutoff affects infrared dynamics, isn't it?
That's right, yeah.
It makes sense to make the cutoff in the large fields.
Uh-huh.
But the rough fields is for the short distance fluctuations, which I guess you assume to be sort of dealt with standard perturbation theory, and it's the modification because of the large field fluctuations. But you'll get to that, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
The way I try to help you.
Well, the main question, I think, is whether one should think about finite as a UV or IR delta.
Well, so I
say UV. Because yep. It's dimensional.
Yeah.
Then you have a
I think it has a big effect also on the infrared.
It does. It
well, it may. It will.
Yes. There's an answer to that question. It's not asymptotically free in the case you're looking at.
Right. So.
First, some practical configurations, considerations. So there are basically three type of calculation that you need to be able to do. One, the first are the law order in perturbation theory, and they are essentially the same as you are doing now, except that you have exponentially small correction that you can calculate semi-classically. Then at the other end, you have the large order in perturbation theory, which is now controlled by powers, and it's heavily suppressed, and it destroys the usual factorial behavior. And then between the two, you have a crossover, which is usually complicated numerically, but my hope is that you can use universal feature of the transition to replace complicated calculation. And so the method works well in a reasonably non-trivial case, such as the anharmonic oscillator and Dyson model in three dimensions. And so that's an example of the accuracy that you can get in the first a simple integral and these two models. The black curves are successive order in regular perturbation theory. The y-axis is the accuracy, so I is good. And so there's an envelope that is the limit of what you can get with regular perturbation theory, and these are the result that you get with increasing cuts. And so you see there's some universal feature.
What's the horizontal?
It's the accuracy. So it's the coupling constant.
Oh, awesome.
So it's this is in this graph, this is the strong coupling and this is the weak coupling. So when the coupling gets smaller, perturbation theory gets better. But when the coupling gets larger, you have an envelope that you cannot go above with a regular perturbation theory. And so this allows you to go far in this forbidden region. Now, so the field cut is something that is not fixed in general, and you can use it as like a variational parameter, and so you can adjust this arbitrary parameter to minimize or to eliminate the discrepancy that depends a little bit on the situation with the correct value that in general you don't know. And so a way.
What's K?
The order.
The
order in perturbation.
Oh, yeah. The order of the perturbation.
Yeah. So your field cut, the optimal field cut will depend on the coupling and on the order at which you can, the maximal order to which you can do a calculation. And so since you don't know the exact answer, you have to use an approximation to do this, and you can use the strong coupling that provides some our orthogonal or complementary information, and that seems to be a suitable approach for crossover problem. And now the net result is that your series has no coefficient that effectively depend on the coupling, so it's not a perturbative series as you know it.
So you want to take very high orders and somehow argue that the adjusted value of phi max goes to infinity?
Well, in practice, as k becomes larger, phi max gets larger also.
And there is a strong coupling expansion. Once you put in phi max finite, then even if you start originally with a theory that's unbounded, then you can always do essentially high temperature expansions. Is that what you mean by strong?
No. So the value of phi max that optimize your weak series expansion is a numerical value.
Okay. And I'm sorry to keep asking questions.
Yeah, but that's good.
When you put in phi max, you have a new interaction here.
That's right. Yeah.
So if you say took the other interaction you had and set it to zero, there's actually going to be phase transition somewhere along the phi max axis.
Because
there's going to be, if you took a free field theory with phi max at strong coupling, it'll actually have a disordered phase at an exponentially decaying phase. And so you have to be careful when you're trying to adjust phi max that somehow you don't have, there's no governing of a fixed point from phi max,
uh-huh.
You could conceivably run into a different theory.
Uh-huh, yep. That's life. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. But what ultimately you want to do is to go to large enough phi max, because that will remove your. So you see, when you have a finite max, you have
a finite max. You should have a weak coupling phase if you're in more than two dimensions.
Yeah. Now, so there's a, in general, there's a connection between a large field cutoff and an ultraviolet cutoff. So, and so I can think about any semi-classical example that I can think of. For instance, a spherical charge density, the that is a confined within a radius r by some new interaction that give you a scale r, then the energy, the total energy and the maximum field are both controlled by this scale that is introduced in the problem by basically dimensional analysis and coupling powers that can give you something that is far from.
That depends, of course, on how you built in this cutoff, this lambda and k-dependent cutoff as a function of the coupling constant itself. So your cutoff is in the regime where, say, the harmonic oscillator is being cut off, even at high momentum scales, right? And so that's where you get the modification from. That's why you modify the oscillator coefficients, so E of k, are going to depend explicitly on your fine max. So that means that you really make fine max very small. Because at very high momentum, the wave functions localize very closely to the origin, because the momentum is high. So if you're sensitive to the cutoff, that means that you have to make phi max appropriately small.
That's correct, yeah.
Okay.
And so you can see that when you use the strong coupling, mm-hmm. I mean, there's a... So what you get, for instance, is the dimensionless quantity lambda times some power of phi max is equal to a constant. It's what you typically get in the strong coupling. So strong coupling means small phi max. That's in that sense, that's correct. Yeah. And so you see that the problem of perturbation theory is that you cannot reproduce the e to the minus lambda phi 4 suppression with perturbation theory. And so when you have a strong coupling, you have you can take very small fluctuation. So that's, I don't know if that answer your question. So another semi-classical example, so you put radiation in a resonant cavity, and Maxwell equation are linear, so you can multiply it by 1000. There is no limit. The only limit is that your cavity explode if the force is comparable to the Coulomb force in the material of the cavity. And so again, you get a connection between the scale in the problem, which is either E. Rydberg or M E. So which are the same up to a power of alpha. And well, do not use this for practical purpose. This is a huge overestimate. And don't sue me for.
That's also derivative.
What?
That's
derivative. Derivative, that's right, yeah. Well, I mean, it's a plane wave, so it's a omega times a. So you have a if you want to see this as in terms of a, so you have to have a maximum and then you have a 1 over omega in dot. Well, in the other case, which is electrostatic, then you can just use the potential. It's physical. And but you have a 1 over omega in instanton. So now the equation are nonlinear, so you could expect some stabilization. However, you have these conformal properties that allow you to transform a solution of a given size into a solution of a larger size, and what controls the field strength is the size of the instanton. If you cut off the instanton contribution for smaller scales for whatever reason, either if you are working on a lattice or if you have a physical reason to do that, you see that F mu nu is controlled by lambda square. Classical gravity. So if you take again a spherical distribution of mass, and it's nowadays the opposite to electromagnetism, you need something to prevent the collapse. So if you have this that gives you some radius r, say larger than the Schwarzschild radius, then the gravitational energy is less than the total mass energy, which is a very nice result. And the gravitational field, which has a dimension of an acceleration, is controlled by the Schwarzschild radius. There are no extra coupling in this example. Effective potential for a scalar field, and so that's what was discussed last week for the Higgs field, or what is discussed by cosmologists in the case of the inflaton, and possibly by us for glue balls. So suppose that there is a new physics at a given scale. The question is, does a new physics show up at large field fluctuation or at large energy? And for instance, in the case of inflation, Lindy say this is not the criterion, this is the criterion to have a quantum gravity correction. And so he has a model to estimate the size of the quantum gravity correction and what controlled them. And so his argument is you can have fluctuations that are much larger than the Planck scale in four dimensions, while keeping so if your potential is flat enough. And so I think that in general the answer is that you have the natural answer times a constant that is dimensionless and depend explicitly on the model that you are considering, and the coupling, the dimensionless coupling that you can make in this model. And so that's a model dependent question. And so for instance, I think in the lower bound people say that people use that criterion, and it's not clear to me that you can do that without having a clear idea about what is the new physics.
I'm a bit surprised you made this as a general statement without considering whether or not the theory is asymptotically free.
Ah.
I mean, this for an asymptotically free theory, this is a strong statement, because you're saying indeed there's no particular physics coming from high energy, which I cannot rule out, but the thing is that in asymptotic freedom, and issues about universality and things like that might be affected by this statement.
But the point, I think, is, in other words, the justification for what he's doing, is, I think, is that if you look carefully at what he's doing to Phi, it's really putting in a new coupling constant into his theory.
Mm-hmm.
And that is irrelevant. So actually, in two dimensions, it's not. So the reason why I think why what he's doing has some justification. I'm not sure I see where all these arguments are going, but at least the original problem, as you stated it, this cutoff, this spectral cutoff, is dimensionless in two dimensions, and above that, it's actually perturbatively irrelevant, certainly.
Yeah, so for instance, if you take d equal 3, if you try to calculate the critical exponent with this, it's in principle irrelevant.
The 2 plus epsilon, you have to worry about it, but, and maybe even in 3 you have to worry about it, because I think that there may be still a critical point, but above 3, I don't think.
So you're saying that these two theories are the same with finite cutoff of the field, and the same universe, like the glass is just infinite.
In the regime where the bare coupling constant, around there's some region around the bare coupling constant, where the bare coupling constant is 0 in the Phi max bare coupling constant plane, where it shouldn't matter.
I made an experiment, for instance, calculating a critical exponent in three dimensions with a field cut, and it's totally in the exponent are totally insensitive.
But I sort of don't see where all these other arguments are going. I mean, you're showing us these different examples. I don't see how they're
I don't have. I'm just saying that there is some void in our understanding of effective potential, and so what?
This point about the inflaton field is an important one, because in the simplest model, in kinetic inflation only takes place when phi is above, basically, the cutoff.
Uh-huh.
So if it's true that you start to get corrections at that point, then basically means that those models will not work. It's essential for those models.
That's right. Yeah.
Actually, because there is a phase transition in the model as a result of large phi, you could be driven to a second. Even if you're looking at the original fixed point, there's a second fixed point which may affect what's going on. Even if it's Wilson's scenario, where if you have a second fixed point in a theory that's trivial in mean field, you could get some kind of non-triviality. If you have a second fixed point, it could affect the physics, even in the continuum limit of the phi equals, what would be g equals 0.
So my conclusion is that we don't have a complete theory of effective theory, and that proper effective theory should also have something about the field cutoff. I would like to mention that in D equals 3, the critical potential have a finite radius of convergence, and that's something that people who work in the large end, for instance, with a Herbert formula, you can calculate the potential and expand in the power, and you can also find out what is the asymptotic behavior, and you will see that there is a finite radius of convergence. In practical calculation, the field cutoff trivially regulates some ultraviolet divergence. For instance, you take the sum of the phi square, which is something which is ultraviolet divergence, is regulated more effectively by the field cutoff than by the lattice cutoff. And popular lattice models have both field cutoff and lattice cutoff, but it's also maybe a source of artifact. So I think we have to try to understand this connection between the large field cutoff and the ultraviolet cutoff more, or possibly infrared cutoff more depth. Now I will briefly mention a very simple example where you can do calculations. And so a one-side scalar field theory, a one-plaquette gauge theory, and an harmonic oscillator. And despite the triviality, these I think a lot of feature can be understood from these examples. So you take a one-side scalar field theory, so you have a Gaussian integral with an anharmonic correction. And so you can see that the peak of this integrand move too fast with the order that you of expansion that you use, and so the order move like k, and the peaks move like k squared. So at some point, you have to reduce the coupling as you increase the order, which is a feature of asymptotic series. Now, if you put a cut, then when the peaks moves outside of the cut, the contribution is completely cut off, and you get a converging series. So if I plot again the significant digit versus the coupling as I did before, so this is strong coupling, this is weak coupling. So I have regular perturbation theory here, and then I have cut perturbation theory with increasing cuts, so it gets closer and closer to the regular perturbation theory, and you see that at least at even orders you have a special value of the coupling where for a particular cut you get the exact answer. And so the optimization method here, I use the lowest order strong coupling to calculate, allows you to get high up in these tips. So what it does is to determine the optimal cut approximately for a given coupling. And so this is the lowest order in the strong coupling. You can go to higher order, and so it improves at each step, and it also much better than the corresponding strong coupling. So you have the weak coupling and 0, 1, 2, 3 strong coupling, and this is the improved method that use weak coupling up to a certain order, 6e, and then the strong coupling to determine the optimal field cut. So in this simple case, you can solve the crossover problem between the weak coupling and the strong coupling. Another very simple example that probably everybody in this room has used once or another is a single plaquette gauge theory. And after gauge fixing and making a change of variable, you get this expression, which can be for SU2, which can be expressed in terms of Bessel functions. And so this is a gauge invariant cut. The variable T here is the action. So you can apply this for, you can apply this method in a gauge invariant way. And then you can, so due to the fact that SU2 is a compact group, your integral has a compact range. And so now I look at a modified partition function where I take this range of integration arbitrary. And then you can easily calculate the perturbative expansion in this case. And now you see that if you let T max go to infinity, then this becomes the gamma function, and it cancels the factorial suppression here, and you have a factorial growth. So that's what you do in lattice perturbation theory. You add the tail of integration that are removed in the Wilson formulation. And as a consequence, something that is convergent becomes asymptotic. And on the other hand, when you control the fluctuation, so the action, in this case it's the action, T stands for action, if you control this, then you have a power behavior, and the series converge if T max is less than 2 beta. And
so when T max equals 2 beta, then
that's exact. No,
how much is
it? It's I mean, it depends on beta.
No, when T max equals
so
beta, I just try to understand what T is.
Okay.
So T, big T is a plaquette close to 1. No,
so what I'm trying to calculate this. So it's. So in general, it's a function of beta. It's a. It's
what's
a T? T is a variable that stands for everything here.
Right. So it is basically something. I'm just trying to get where you're cutting it off. You're cutting off plaquettes which are close to 1, plaquettes which are close to 0.
So this is near the identity. 0 is near the identity.
So you're cutting off plaquettes which are very far from.
That's right.
If there is two beta by T max,
uh-huh.
you're not including configuration, so the plaquette is
near the center, near the non-trivial part of the center.
At minus one.
Yeah. So for when this is.
So that's where we, in a typical configuration, don't go anyhow.
That's where we?
Where we don't have contributions anyhow. As a practical simulation,
yeah.
very few packets will get.
Uh-huh, that's right, yeah, yeah. And I mean, all the algorithms dot EatBat algorithm have very little weight in this region. So, that, yeah, that's.
But actually, you could define a model which is perfectly fine that the packet is not allowed to go.
Uh-huh, and so some people have done that. So I will come to that.
What is crucial in your case is that the Tmax depends on beta. Your optimal value.
That's right. Yeah. Yep.
Because if you take a fixed Tmax, which is a finite number, you have this rescaling as two beta. But in terms of the trace of the plaquette, you take a finite cut from the trace of the plaquette. Then universality tells you that this shouldn't matter. But since you introduce this extra coupling, but that means that Tmax depends. You take a particular different trajectory to go to the fixed spot, which is determined by this Tmax, which is tuned to beta to have the best
uh-huh.
possible result, this minimal calculational expenditure, apparently. That,
uh-huh.
That's sort of what you try to say. If you can modify the way you approach the fixed point by introducing this extra coupling.
That's right, yeah. And so you also see that you cannot take this larger than 2 beta, or you get something that is. and so when you do perturbation theory, that's what you let this go to.
Let's pursue this. So,
okay.
So I think that you. So if you didn't scale T, so if T over 2 beta is U, then
uh-huh.
there are 2 beta upstairs in the bound. And what you're bounding the plaquette by is something proportional to beta wave.
No. So
just tell us the beta.
Okay. So you see, if beta is here, and when the two is when you are in minus one. So the two here is when
right, so
when you are in the non-trivial part of the center.
So if I look at the configuration, which is minus one plus epsilon. Then, and I want to exclude that one. Then
epsilon
is beta independent. Then T goes like beta.
Then you is going to be 2 minus 2 epsilon times beta.
Times beta.
Yeah.
I'm a little confused because since.
So when beta goes to infinity.
It's hard to point out the integrand vanishes when T is equal to 2 beta anyway. But so how does it help your convergence by taking T to be less than 2 beta, T max to be less than 2 beta?
Oh, you see, so you have the 2 beta. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I see. It's because you're expanding them over 2 beta.
Yeah.
So it's just the.
So yeah, so then the I. Yeah.
I'm just trying to figure out whether this.
T is beta times the.
Whether this is or is not. Perfectly acceptable.
So T is beta times.
So what is the answer? So suppose you solve this model with T max, beta just instead of 2 beta.
Yeah, then you remove, say, 1 half of SU2 that is close to minus
so
1.
That would be a
closure.
I will show you.
Showing the scaling for two matrix.
Let's see.
It's the other way around. down,
but it's not
big. How do you scale Tmax for large beta?
For large beta?
Yeah.
Linearly, yeah.
Yeah, look, Herb, this is the answer. Range of Tmax is a water beta, it's
2 beta. 2 beta.
Right? So if he scales Tmax linearly with beta, that means he's cutting out a fixed amount of the Plaquette space. Just what you want.
Yeah, so that's fine.
No, that's not, it's not worth the thing. It's exactly the same thing.
Yeah. Oh, so oh, I see.
It's cutting out a fixed amount of the Plaquette's value. If he scaled Tmax with beta, because they're really
scaling. If he scaled it with beta.
Just, well, I just asked him the question. He said he scales it with beta.
Oh, okay. Good. So you did that to change that.
Okay.
I'll add to the conclusion. Because there you have your optimal point. That optimal point, go back to the plot you have.
Well, you don't know what the plot is. You don't know what it is. So this is without a cut. This is a perturbation theory without a cut. Now, I apologize. So the weak coupling is now on the right, and the, that's the tradition in lattice. So these are the various order in regular perturbative expansion, so where you let Tmax go to infinity. And it's like the double well. All the corrections are negative. So at some point, when you reduce beta, so when you go toward a strong coupling, you hit the right value, you have the spikes, and then it gets crazy. And the envelope here is basically an instanton envelope. It's the essential singularity that you have. Now I put a cut, and it's a downloading. So what I did is I fixed. So this is fixed Tmax, and I vary beta. So Tmax is 8 in this example. So it's perfect if I can sum the infinite order when beta is equal to 4. And so these are the successive order in perturbation theory, and so you see that it converge toward 4. It is also a solution on the left that is bogus, but I don't know if that answers your question. And there's a fixed Tmax. I will give you the whole thing. So this is now the location of the spikes at different order in the beta Tmax plane. And so at infinite order, you have the Tmax equal to beta line, which is the model itself. But when you are at, when the cut is smaller than the 2 beta, it underestimate the coefficient. And since they are too negative, you can get the right answer. And so you see that the spikes that I had before were located here, and then they get closer and closer to 4 when the order increases. And so you see that now all you need to do is to try to locate this perfect, so at fixed beta, to locate the right Tmax at the given order to get optimal answer. So is it clear now, all the scalings? now, these are the solid lines, the numerical location of the exact solution. And then you can find them with a strong coupling. And so that's order 0, 1, 2, 3, and it apparently converges to the right answer. And then there's also this other solution, which is outside of the radius of convergence, and that looks less accurate. And I will mostly use the other one. And so again, you have a crossover that is decent. So you have the strong coupling here, you have the weak coupling, and then you have the order 6 we're coupling with Tmax determined at order 0, 1, 2, and 3, and so you have a good crossover behavior. Now, a slightly less trivial example is the anharmonic oscillator. And the nice thing is you can do it in the continuum directly. So I use quantum mechanical language. So you have a potential that becomes arbitrarily steep at some value of x and minus x. And so I'm interested in the behavior of the coefficient. And so I will use the ratio of the coefficient at given cut to the infinite value, to the traditional value that was calculated by Bender and Wu 35 years ago. And so the nice thing is that you see some kind of a universal behavior. And you can collapse the data into some universal function that is you can infer by reasoning. And so the crossover between the large cut and a small cut value of the coefficient seems to be universal, and at least in a good approximation. And so that could save some time if you need to find some approximate expression for the cut perturbation theory. Also, it's remarkable how good the semi-classical formula are. So they are supposed to be valid here, and they extend nicely at a very small x max, and I don't really understand why. So these are example where it works. And now I would like to do this in four-dimensional glue dynamics. And so I haven't done it. It's a lot of work. But I've been thinking about certain related topics. The most important, maybe the last one, what is the correct theory? And so first I will define what is a gauge field cut, and it's not, there is no unique answer, but you can do it in a gauge invariant way or in the Landau gauge, and there are even several ways to do it. I would like to discuss the effect of a field cut, and in general it's small except in the crossover region. And then I will study the large field dynamics, so the dynamics of the center, basically, by taking beta is negative, and so it's the other side of what Jan Banot and Michael Kreutz have studied. And so I found a first order phase transition at beta equal minus 22 for SU3, sorry. And then I will show you that lattice perturbation theory suggests the existence of a third order phase transition. And at the end, I will ask what is the correct theory to describe the continuum limit of a fictitious world where you have no fermions and just gluons.
Can I ask a general question about philosophy? What you're doing is you're putting in a new coupling, which you hope is an irrelevant operator that improves the behavior of your series. Is this the only way to do it? I mean, why not put in some other crazy coupling into the original theory, which eventually you want to optimize and hopefully take away anything you want?
Uh-huh.
Do it this way. In other words, whenever you put in sharp cuts, I mean, it usually makes your life miserable when you want to think about things like normalization. Why not do something that's smoother? Have a 5-2n coupling where n is very large, but not infinite.
Well, it's you see, a field cut is a limit of the
infinity.
Yeah.
So but why take n infinity? Why not have something smoother?
I mean,
irrelevant couplings.
Yeah.
And so it shouldn't matter which one you choose.
I have no objection for doing this. I've been doing it with sharp cuts, but you can do it with a smooth cut if you think it's more convenient.
I'm just trying to understand the philosophy, because it's true that when you do this, I mean, you basically put in a second coupling, and now you're trying to improve your perturbation series. But there are an infinite number of ways you can do it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to choose a shortcut.
Yep.
So I'm just asking, have you thought at all about what's from the point of view of the renormalization group, what's the best way to do it? It probably isn't this from a renormalization.
Well, my experience is that it's irrelevant, but...
it is irrelevant, but I'm saying you could probably invent something that's even more relevant, or has even less impact on your perturbation series than this does.
Well,
some of it is related to improved actions, they definitely don't have a high cutoff, but it changes sort of the yield of fire that feels in such a way that you're closer to the continuum.
Yeah.
It's not a technical question, it's a philosophical question.
Well, I have no objection to generalizing this. I just happen to have been doing it without knowing it, so it's a more for historical reason, but I have no objection for generalizing it the way you say.
But is it easier somehow, just for practical purpose, like cutting that off a certain order, and numerically or something?
Well, in Monte Carlo, it's very easy to apply. In a Monte Carlo case, but
what is it you after? You want the bare perturbation to be better, or the renormalized?
Well, I've been trying just with the bay at this point, but everybody knows that you can improve. Yeah, you can improve the situation with using the.
Yeah, but that's a little bit the problem. If you say, for example, the crossover region, and this is in the bare couplers. From the physical point of view, we're not interested in that. We need to go to the coupling, and it's the effective the strength of the effective coupling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so you're controlling sort of. A perturbative scheme for calculating the phase diagram, in a sense. And you should, as you say, when you go to negative beta, you can see signs of a phase transition. So in the same way, you can see sort of this phase transition if you would have as a function of a joint action, if you put in an adjoint part, you can see whether or not you have a phase transition or a crossover with these methods. But we are interested ultimately in the beam coupling limit for the bare theory.
That's right, but I will come to that question. I have a question about. I will come to this. I have a question and I have no answer. So first, the idea of a cut is not unique. And for instance, if you look the scalar case, you can look at your configuration as a LD dimensional vector and. The two natural norms are the one that defines spheres or cubes. And for instance, I looked at 10,000 configurations and plot the two norms of the configuration. And so you see that there are very strong correlation between these two. So the field cut that I have defined up to now is far from unique. The problem of this, it is non-local, so this is a local. The nice thing about this is it's a local. You can impose it side by side. This is non-local, so it's something that I've never explored. But on
the intent to make this proportion to the volume, square root of the volume in that case, or what?
Yes.
Not the max, the sigma.
Not the max.
You have a sigma of
the sparkle cut. Sigma over by x squared if you are normalizing this to the volume.
Yeah, sorry, yeah, I have to divide by the I have divided by the volume. So I Yeah, that's what is plotted here. Now
You're not worried about the fact that now it's a non-local theory?
One is non-local.
Yeah, I mean, you have the spherical cutoff. It's very bizarre.
Well, if you go to momentum space, it's the Fermat is very non-local cut. It goes all over the.
So that's what I'm working.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
It's one direction being.
Yeah.
One extra variable.
So I just wanted to figure out whether this is cut off in the.
Yeah. So that may be the. So it's a mess if you look at the Fourier component. So the sum of the phi square might be a better cut from that point of view.
This is where I was also suggesting using a different way of a different irrelevant operator. It might not be so bad.
Well, but the way you propose is a strictly local. The way he has in mind is probably more k dependent, which maybe. More interesting, but more difficult also if you do Monte Carlo. For
yeah, because I'm worried about your statement that you don't affect the cutoff doesn't affect the physics. That is a momentum dependent issue, because I know in K theories that if I would make sort of the cutoff in the field space,
yeah, but
I really screw up my infrared dynamics.
Uh-huh. So for maybe true for the gauge field, but for the scale, for the scalar field, as
trace of F squared is not counting A.
Even if you cut trace of F squared, you will.
Because I mean, in the example he was discussing last week, for instance, the lambda phi 4 dominates completely, and so there you have exponential control of your error. So my philosophy is to make this the difference with a exact model as small as possible, and that suppose you know what the model is, which is a open question for glue or dynamics.
You find it out by just implementing the scheme.
Talking to people who may have a good idea about what the right theory is. So now this is the correlation between the Landau gauge. So this is the link, the average link in the Landau gauge and the average placket. So this is gauge invariant. This is gauge variant, but in the Landau gauge, it's precisely minimal. And so you see that there is a good correlation between these two. Also, the sphere and the cubes. So if you take the maximum of 1 minus 1 over n real trace U link and the average, there are also good correlation between the two. So the sample correlation is close to 0.4 here. And so clearly there are many possibilities that are more or less physically equivalent.
Susan, how do you determine the correlation? I mean, you have a distribution in the gauge invariant quantity.
Yep. So I have 200 configuration, okay, and so for each configuration I look at the maximum of the link, and I look at the average of the link. Okay, so for each configuration, and that gives you one point, and you plot all of them, and so you see, I mean, here they put them in bins, and so you see the. After you go in the Landau gauge fixing, yeah. And so you have to make a decision what is best for you. It may also be, you may have a practical consideration about what you want to do. Now, let's see. I think I skipped. Yeah, so that's good. Yes. Okay, now. I'm just talking about the effect of a gauge invariant cut on an observable. And so I just took a certain number of configuration at different beta, and then I throw away the 80% that have the largest value of the plaquette. So I throw away a huge fraction of configuration that have large field configuration in a gauge.
What's the largest value of the plaquette, close to minus one?
P is 1 minus 1, so it's 0 at right, near the identity.
Away from the container.
Yeah. And so what I get is that the effect is surprisingly small. So you see, this is 1 part in 100, 2 part in 1,000. The only.
The effect on the packet
dialogue? The delta P over P. So So I do the average with my lowest 20%. So I have a sample of, for instance, 200 configuration, and I throw away the 1/60 that have the largest value, and I keep the bottom. I do the average. I look what is the change normalized in P units, and it's very small. The only effect that you see is that there's a peak near 5.6. So it's something people have known for 25 years, that when you temper or when you modify the large field configuration, you get huge effect in the crossover. And so for those who forgotten about gluodynamics, the crossover is about near 5.6 or 5.7, and is the region where the strong coupling and the weak coupling are not accurate. And so the method that have been used to tamper with the large field configuration is adding adjoint component to the action. It was done by Banot and Michael Kreutz. And more recently, I saw that Azenbusch and Necco have put a negative adjoint action, and hopefully to get some better estimate of the global mass. So, the philosophy is to go further away from the critical point. adding a monopole chemical potential that has been suggested by Mack and collaborator and implemented by Richard Brouwer and Kessler and somebody else.
I don't remember.
It was Zombie Levy.
And another method is to remove the center vortices that was done by Philip de Forcran and Massimo Delia. So this is the graph that Giant Banot and Michael Kreutz got 25 years ago. The crossover for SU2 is somewhere here. So you have a pimple in the specific heat if you continue this line. And so what I understand Azenbusch was trying to do is to go farther away from this critical point. The effect of the chemical potential for the monopole, so you take every cube and you look at the product of the sign of the trace of the plaquette, and you put a penalty lambda, and so you see that it matches the first order perturbation theory much better, and so you have a significant difference in the crossover region and even farther. And what these things, the question is, what is the what is the theory you want to study that gives you the best continuum limit? And one other thing I have done is to study the dynamics of the center by going at negative beta. And so naively, So in the continuum, if you go g into ig, g square into minus g square, then this becomes non-Hermitian, and this becomes unbounded. But on a lattice, it's not a tragedy because you have the compactness of the group, so you can just study what's happening. Then you have to look at the absolute minimum of the action. So you have to put, for SU2 and SU3, it's very simple. Every plaquette has to be in a non-trivial element of the center. And to do that, one way to do that is to find a set of lines that touch every plaquette by one and only one link. And you can do it in two dimension, that's trivial. In three dimension, that's not difficult. And in four, what? You have a perspective problem?
No.
I want to know, what's the size of your lattice?
In the calculation I made, we made 8x4, 10x4.
Because there's an exact change of values that brings you from negative.
I will show it. So I'm just looking at the vacuum now. So I'm constructing a state where every plaquette is in the center. And so you can do it in four dimension. Now for SU2, you have only one choice for the center, but for SU3, you have two choices. So you have a much more entropy in the SU3 case. And now for SU2, as you mentioned, so there is a change of variable because -1 is a center, and it's a SU2 element. So you can just shift by 2 beta. And you get the original action. And
that's not true if the size is odd.
You need an even lattice. Yeah. Otherwise, you have a frustration line. And so you have. So it's like a Schringer Dyson identity that P beta and P minus beta add up to 2. And so you see that it's perfectly, there's some kind of a duality. So there's nothing new in SU2. But it shows that there is an essential singularity because if you take the limit G square goes to 0 plus or goes to 0 minus, you get a different answer. So you have an essential singularity. And also the Wilson loop have a -1 that depends on the area. The energy picks up something that change every side but does not change every two sides. On the other hand, in SU3, it's a new situation. And so numerically, we found first order phase transition at beta equal -22, and it has basically the same kind of metastable branch that were observed, for instance, in SU5 at positive beta by Michael a long time ago. And so the question is,
this first order phase
transition? I don't know. I try.
Because you have, if you with some conjugation or something, has to do with e to the 2 pi I over 3 plus minus.
Well, you have Ising dynamics, which comes from the fact that you have two choices for your center.
Is there a transformation of variables with phase?
I don't think so.
It's probably some Z3 phase transition, right?
So, I try to generalize this identity, and it doesn't work.
Yeah,
I saw
that.
You see the It would be useful to define it complex beta.
This is a naive question.
This is in 3+1.
This is in 4. I mean, 4 Euclidean. Four Euclidean.
It's probably just the Z2 phase transition of Z2 gauge theory in quarter dimensions. It's a first order phase transition.
That's right. Yeah. So you see, that's an order disorder. You can, we have plotted the imaginary part.
There's 3 states.
It's 2 states because the one is irrelevant. Okay. So you have the choice between the two. So it's a 2 state, I think. Okay. And so when you plot.
That's true. Yeah. So it's quite a little bit of energy.
Yeah, because at negative beta 1 is you cannot go. Yeah. It's probably like the ice problem. And so we tried mean field theory and didn't find any indication that would happen. So the question is, now if I look, if I put the adjoint, it's probably a line of first order phase transition that maybe terminates some way, and question if it is interesting to do it or not. And now a last thing I want to say is that lattice, so the regular lattice perturbation theory, now, so what you do is, that has been started, by, I think, with Urs, Eller, and Karsh. So you extend the integration range from minus infinity to plus infinity. That's for practical reason. But this way, you have no finite group artifacts in lattice perturbation theory. And so I used the theory by Di Renzo for the plaquette that went to order 10. And the ratio extrapolate to a value near 6. And if you use the estimator that people who spend their life analyzing series say are the most efficient, which are the extrapolated ratio and the extrapolated slope to find the radius of convergence and gamma minus 1, you find something that so Di Renzo and collaborator have spent many years calculating this coefficient, and so this is their 95 data that is unstable, but the 2000 data has smaller statistical error, and these are the 2 volume that they use, so it's pretty reliable, and so it's points to beta critical equal 5.72. The exponent is, so this is an estimator for gamma minus 1, and it's close to minus 2. So gamma is like minus 1, a little below. And so what I conclude from this is that if I believe the series, my plaquette as a non-analytic behavior of the form that is given here, so with a location at 5.7 and an exponent which presumably is not integer, and so if you take 2 derivative, you will get full-blown singularity. And so we look for this, and so that's, and found something that is rather inconclusive. So this is the specific E, the first derivative of the plaquette. The peak for a 4x4 lattice is kind of high and much to the left. When you increase the volume, the peak goes down and moves slightly to the right. The region where I think something may happen is here, and so we we have done a little bit of 10 to the 4 and we haven't seen any effect in the first derivative. The second derivative, so you have some kind of peak that goes down, and so it's 6 by 4 and 8 by 4. And so the prediction is that there is a singularity here, and that should blow up with the volume, and I don't see that at all happening. The problem is that it's a twice subtracted quantity. So you need enormous statistics, and we only have 16 nodes, and so I'm not sure I will ever be able to rule that out, but it seems I don't see any evidence for third order phase transition in that model.
We're using this very sophisticated averaging,
like jackknife and
this is tricks of Akimaya, that you locally average a lot to reduce noise. All kinds of tricks.
Uh-huh.
This is just a straight simulation that you're doing.
Yep, yep.
No, just ordinary Monte Carlo.
That's right, yeah. Yeah. So there are tricks.
There are some tricks that people have developed for string tension, but they will work for basically, you average a lot of stages.
They work with packets as well?
Sure.
Yeah. Yes. It's like this new share.
Yeah, but there's a review by a paper by Harvey Meyer, which is after Lucia.
Anyway, so that's wide open, but so I don't see any evidence for a singularity. So it's quite possible that there is no singularity, but that perturbation theory.
It would be an embarrassment to the field if there were a singularity.
That's right, yeah. But it's. That's right, yeah. But I mean, the evidence for me is pretty strong from the series.
So it's, there could be some singularity in the complex plane nearby.
No. The series tells you where it is. The series tells you where it is.
Well, that's not the way you analyze the series.
No, but all the terms have the same sign. So it's there. So it's the series. If you believe the series tells you there is a singularity there. But it's a different theory, because you have ignored completely the fact that the field is the compact effect is completely washed out
that's a series that's supposed to be asymptotic.
That's right. It's a non-Borel summable. I mean, it's the pole on the positive real axis.
But so. As far as calculating the terms of asymptotic series, it's a correct procedure.
That's, yeah, and I mean, I really trust the people who have done that. I mean, they have spent the last 10 years doing it.
Typically, these methods that you apply to strong coupling series. I'm sorry, I'm confused.
This is a weak coupling. This is a weak coupling.
You're allowed to apply those small methods that you described to strong coupling series, because there you know that there is a finite circle of convergence that you're looking for where it hits the non-monotonicity. But applying a method like that to an asymptotic series sounds to me fishy.
Well, I agree. So it's not supposed to do that. the ratio are supposed to grow linearly, but they stabilize. And so that was so the explanation is that you have two type of component in the series, and ultimately the factorial behavior shows up. But I mean I think there's a very strong signal for.
I don't have the experience to say that if I don't remember in my head a picture of what this a plot of capital R as a function of L looks like.
In
a classic case, like the Ising model as a function of beta in the small coupling or beta equals zero. I just don't have it in my head.
So. The Ising model doesn't matter really. Each series behaves more or less the same way.
Yeah, but let's take just a classic example. Beta, you know, you do the very long series.
Uh-huh.
I don't know how it looks to you.
The ratio, well.
What does the plot really look like? I mean,
well,
in
that case, you have the. You have a complex singularity, so the ratio, I think, move farther. Are much more jumpy, and in that case, the estimator I shown are made by people who typically worked on this, like Nickel, so it looks much better than the Ising case, yeah. So.
Anybody has ever tried to do this
on
an asymptotic series, and what happens if you do it just
take... it's nonsense, because in an asymptotic series...
No, if you go far enough that you hit the linear behavior...
Yeah, then you can't do anything.
No, but take a function like, I don't know, a Bessel function of a Bessel function, an I, an imaginary argument, modified Bessel function.
Uh-huh, well, that's...
which is close to this.
Uh-huh.
Take it probably at the same higher order, not I naught. I would guess that for a while, it takes a while until the asymptotic behavior sets in. The question I have, can it be misbehaved? Just because it's asymptotic series, but you decided to treat it as if it were convergent, can it take
So
just to smite you because you're not doing this thing.
Before you take the thermodynamic limit, if you're taking a model like an Ising model, both the strong and the weak coupling are strictly convergent.
No, but one is in beta and one is in infinite minus beta. That's a side issue.
Yeah, I mean, once it's only becomes asymptotic when you take the thermodynamic limit.
No,
yeah, so you have a transient, it's a transient behavior.
Yeah, and it could be even typical of a series that has an intention to become asymptotic.
I mean, are you talking, what is the series now? This is
a there's a plaquette. Effect. There's a plaquette, the weak coupling in inverse power of beta.
Yeah, absolutely, because it is just even a single plaquette. It's just a modified Bessel function. But, you know, a straight Bessel function on I naught, which is a very simple integral, but if in the integral representation you have a high power of cosine, then until it hits, it feels the two. It may behave as if it's convergent.
Yeah. So
that's my feeling.
So in the example I gave before, if you play with the Tmax, then you will. If Tmax is less than 2 beta, you will get this.
Yeah, but the total cutoff of an integral is just take. Just take a series for I 100. The asymptotic part, so you have to take expand it into the minus beta, whatever is that.
The basic for this to work is the ratio have to converge to something. Otherwise.
So the question is whether you can reproduce an apparent convergence of ratios in a series which you know guaranteed is asymptotic, and you also know everything about it because it's just an integral.
Because in
people will, this does raise some suspicions because of that.
Yeah, so I've done it for the Bessel function, and it shoots off straight very, very fast. What? For I naught, yeah.
Right.
For I naught. I 20.
Yeah, because I think you need, there's the other, there's an exponent, there's a competing
set. That's right.
And they want to
So it would be straightforward to try, so. Yeah. Yeah. So my conclusion is, what is the right theory for gluodynamics? So the continuum behavior that is usually extracted in the crossover on practical lattice is sensitive to field cuts. Now, another question is the second or possible second order phase transition that we could find at negative beta relevant for the continuum version of that theory. Same thing with the third order phase transition. And so basically it all gets to the question, what kind of effective theory do we want? And my impression is that what we want is to do a massive glue ball with a mass which is not small in cutoff units. And then it's a very non-universal thing. And you have to decide, you have to give some prescription to fix this non-universal feature. And I have no idea how to do that. And without answering that question, I will never spend years to calculate a series because I want to know what is the right theory to approximate. Project, if anybody has tried this or has idea, I would like to make an effective theory for real trace U plaquette. A non-trivial problem is a stochastic perturbation theory with boundary. It's non-trivial because the order 0, 1, 2, and so on field have correlated probability distribution, and the effect of the cut is non-trivial. Inverse and determinant of matrices with a cut in the norm of, for instance, in the Landau gauge, is does it work if you make the cut stringent enough, and or does it compete with the other method? So these are things I have not done anything about, but that I'm interested in.
But it's an interaction, so it's not Gaussian. What you're calling the matrix, you know, your perturbation series in that sense is not the same.
I take Monte Carlo configuration, and I only take one such that the for instance the maximum of.
I understand it, but you can only do it in R.
That's right. Yeah. But or does it compete with multi-grid though? I don't. Yep. Thank you for your attention.